The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1 with All Care Pharmacy. Expert advice to keep the whole family healthy at All Care, the largest Irish-owned pharmacy brand.
Good afternoon on this Wednesday afternoon. How are you? 2 weeks to Christmas Day. If you want to contact the programme, 51551 ray@rte.ie. 1.8 million euro for a printer. I've been thinking about that. It doesn't seem right, does it, that it's 1.8 million for a printer. So there must be something else to it. And I know what it is. I suspect what it is. It's a 3D printer, not just an ordinary 3D printer, but it's a 3D TD printer. That's what's happening there. So they're putting in their vital statistics, you know. 5'8", grey hair, bulging paunch. Putting it into the printer, printing it off, getting the 3D replica clone of the TD, placing it in the thing for the votes, and getting somebody, you know, it's genius. By location. You can be in Europe, you can be down in your constituency, you can be off sunning yourself in the south of France, and you'll have your 3D TD there to vote for you. That's what it is. That's the only explanation for a 1.8 million printer. It's a 3D TD printer. That's what it is. We're coming to the end of the year, you might have noticed. And not only the end of the year, but the end of the decade. So there's lists aplenty out there. There's lists about everything. A couple of lists from today is the Google searches from 2019. What did we get onto our computers and put into Google? The backstop, number one. We all wanted to know what it meant. So that was the top search on Google, which is great, I think, because it shows that we're interested. We're engaged with politics. And I think when they do surveys of countries around the world, when it comes to engaging in politics, we're high up there. We're high up there in the top five. Area 51 is at number two, and a dead ting. Now, I didn't know what this was. I had to be informed by some members of the team. Seemingly, it was a phrase used in Love Island during the summer, that one of the participants, female, referred to another participant, female, as a dead ting. So people didn't know what it meant, so they went in and they Googled it. And I think it's an unattractive female, which is not very nice, is it? A dead ting. Fracking is there, Brexit is there, TikTok is there, a boomer is there, pansexual is there. And what did people find out what to do from Google? Because you do, I've done it. How do you do this? How do you do this? Top of the how to questions, I'll give you the top five. How to solve a Rubik's Cube. How to lose belly fat is number four. At number three, how to pronounce P-S-A-L-M. I thought everybody knew how to pronounce Pazam. Sam. Vote. How to vote is at number two. And how to boil an egg. How to boil an egg is top of the list. Isn't that mad in this day and age? That people have to Google how to boil an egg. Of course, there's loads of considerations when you come to boiling an egg. You know, is it from the fridge? Is it at room temperature? Is it fresh or is it not so fresh? How big it is? So you might Google how to boil an egg and it might tell you 3 to 6 minutes or whatever it is. But you need all those other considerations. Somebody needs to come up with a formula. I'm sure it exists already. You know, freshness of egg, dimensions of egg, room temperature from the fridge and all of that. And then if you want it soft, medium or hard, all of those things have to be put in. They've come up with another list as well. The top toys from the last 50 years. This is pure nostalgia here around Christmas time. Space Hopper was the big one in 1971. This will make you smile if not laugh out loud. In 1975, the big toy was a pet rock. A pet rock, ladies and gentlemen, pet rock. Yeah, that's all. It didn't do anything. It didn't come to life. You didn't have to water it. It didn't do anything. It was a pet rock. That's 1975. A lot more instant times. 1978, Hungry Hungry Hippos. That's still around, isn't it? Rubik's Cube, mentioned already, 1980. The Batmobile, 1989. PlayStation, 1995. Furbies, 1998. There's no mention of clackers in there. Remember clackers? Two hard balls and the end of a piece of string. And you clack them off each other. That's why they're called clackers. And then the whole thing was you had to get them to clack at the bottom and clack at the top. So and it sounded a bit like that when you got it going. But the urban myth at the time was that somebody broke their wrist and had to ban clackers. What was your favourite toy? Speaking of toys, the elf on the shelf. Yeah, he's out there. Amy Huberman. They have some really productive elves. They've two children and two elves. And she posted a picture, Amy did, overnight, of the elves tucking into pizza and also drinking little Coca-Cola bottles. Very clever. Stephen Teep, his elf is very busy as well. He just has one. And there's a picture Stephen posted of little elf sitting on a little chair with a little remote control, watching the telly. Our elf got a key to Santa's workshop. Seemingly all the elves get a key to Santa's workshop. And our elf asked the children at home to mind the key for him, keep it safe. So that's part of the deal there. I'll have to have a word with our elf, make sure they get a little bit more creative with their ideas. Christmas trees, is your cat destroying your Christmas tree? Laura sent us in a picture of her neighbour's cat who ran into her house to eat her baubles. James sent us a picture of a video of his cat Bertha, who refused to vacate the middle of the beautifully decorated Christmas tree. Seemingly it's cats more than dogs. We've two dogs and they don't care. They actually don't care. I don't think they even know that the Christmas tree is up. They don't care. Cats, on the other hand, seem to be interfering with people's Christmas trees. So let us know how it's going for you. It is the time of festive cheer, and there's a lot of charitable people out there in generosity. And we spoke to Rosie Connolly yesterday, and Rosie is an influencer and a blogger and a social media star, and she decided that she was going to raise funds for Our Lady's Hospital Crumlin and Temple Street Hospital, and she came up with a sort of a novel way of doing it. It's sort of a raffle, but to buy your raffle ticket you had to go to GoFundMe and donate at least €5 to Temple Street and Our Lady's Hospital in Crumlin. When we spoke to her yesterday, it was up to 105,000 in less than 24 hours. I see now it's up to 178,000. Oh, 178,000 she's raised. So well done. Well done to Rosie, and well done to Kitty as well, Kitty Cosgrave, because Kitty was out over the weekend switching on the Christmas lights in Balnaboola in County Wexford. I'd never heard of Balnaboola either. It's a tiny little crossroads of a place between New Ross and Wexford on the N25. The Horse and Hound is the pub, the one pub in Balnaboola. And Kitty has been living there for most of her life. She's 99. She has 49 grandchildren, 57 great-grandchildren, and listen to this, two great-great-grandchildren. And they gave her the honour of switching on the very first Christmas lights in Balnaboola. They've never had a Christmas tree in Balnaboola before. So well done to Kitty. And we were on to Kitty today, and she's in great form. She went viral earlier on this year because she sang one of her favourite songs, Danny Boy, with Daniel O'Donnell. And she'll celebrate her 100th birthday on March 13th next year. So in advance, we say happy birthday, Kitty. Well done on the lights, and hope you have a great Christmas. What's that? 49 and 57 is 106. So she has 106 direct descendants. No, there's two. Sorry, I've left out the two great-great-grandchildren. That's 108. She has 108 direct descendants. That must be a bit of a record. And she, when we were on to Kitty and her daughter, she said, would you please wish her twin grandchildren, Laura and Caitlin, a happy 11th birthday today? I'd say there's birthdays every second week there, if you have 108 people who are directly related to you. 51551, ray@rte.ie. Good afternoon. Andy Williams. It's the most wonderful time of the year on RTÉ Radio 1. 51551 for your text. You can send us emails to ray@rte.ie. The real reason those clackers were banned is that they became the weapon of choice for thugs and muggers to attack their victims. I didn't know that. Didn't happen down Kildare way. The day I was not sure if I should add milk to scrambled egg, I went searched it on Google. There was 1 million views for a video. So I'm not the only one, says Kath. I don't put milk into scrambled egg now. I'd put cream and butter. Oh yeah, cream and butter. You just put them in, so you put the egg in, mix it around, then leave it sit for about 30 seconds. Then you add your cream and your butter and you mix it around again. I haven't done that in a long time. I must do that this weekend. My pet rock in 1978 was called Sharon Stone. Yay! There you go. Now, Niamh has become the show elf. she attempted to make edible cups last Friday. failed miserably. There was coffee everywhere. Still cleaning up after it. But to make amends, she said, "I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll make Christmas crackers." And you did.
I did, yeah. I will say my cups held their integrity for the first 5 seconds. And I had one at home at other Niamh on the show, Niamh Hamill. She suggested that I put Baileys in it. And I drank some Baileys in it that night and I was vindicated.
5 seconds.
Yeah. Baileys lasted at least 2 minutes.
They held their integrity for five seconds. It's not a good selling point for a cup. 5 seconds. These look a lot better.
Yeah, no, they do. Yeah, the Christmas crackers. And this is a kind of a way of having a bit of a more sustainable Christmas, because I was in the shops and I was thinking, oh my God, there's so much packaging and plastic stuff in a lot of Christmas crackers that you'll throw out and it'll end up in a landfill. And I thought, do you know what? I've so much wrapping paper from presents and stuff in the year, or brown paper at home in a drawer. What am I going to do with it? And I decided, let's make a Christmas cracker.
Right. And did you know you can't recycle wrapping paper?
It's one of the
non-recyclable, seemingly. Yeah. That's what Jenny told me the other day. Yeah. Okay, so you went about making your own crackers.
Yes.
Now, the brilliant thing about this is that they are bespoke.
Yes.
So if you have people around for Christmas dinner, you can place their particular cracker on their particular place at the table.
Exactly. And fellas or ladies, if you're looking for a handy way to propose, you could slip an engagement ring in there as well. Imagine that for a Christmas proposal.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah. It would be one of those, what do they call them, rings? Not the real ring. You wouldn't put the real ring.
The promise rings.
The promise ring.
You could put a promise ring in there.
Yeah, you wouldn't put the real thing in, because what if you pulled it and went somewhere and you couldn't find it?
Oh, well, you know, the danger that...
Be careful out there. Be careful out
the
there.
The risks you take. But actually...
Now, do you want to tell them how to make it first, or do you want to test it first? What would you like to do?
We can test it. Yeah.
Okay. So this is made by you at home.
Okay, you're holding it fairly rigidly there, but anyway, let's go. Oh no, hang on. That was a disaster. But...
Didn't work too well.
All my Christmas crafting is just not going
Why did that happen?
Because I don't know. Maybe
I know why. Because I didn't grab it strong enough.
Yeah, maybe I should have grabbed
it
a bit stronger.
So you pulled the whole thing. No, your grabbing was fine.
Yeah, okay.
You pulled it right through, you see. And I should
anyway,
have done it. Right, you made a hat as well.
Same,
okay, you made a hat as well. Very good.
So what you heard there was the Christmas, that was a Christmas cracker snapper.
Where do you get those?
So I got them in the Art and Hobby Shop. And this is the bargain of it, right? And like my daughter now, she's nearly 8. And we're going to go home and we're going to make these at the weekend. You get 12 for €1 in the Art and Hobby Shop, and they're all around the country, so that's really easy. And you just stick them onto the end. You get an A4 sheet of paper and you stick them onto the end there. And what you need are 3 toilet rolls.
Inserts.
Oh, yeah, so
look at you, Mary Fitzgerald.
Yeah. I know this is kind of, you know, but if you can understand it away, and we can put up pictures on the website if people are interested. But you put one in the middle and you put 2 at either end, and you use them as the kind of
the cylinder to hold,
you know, so, and then you roll it around, and then you can glue it at the end, and then you remove the holders, and so that, and then you put a ribbon around the side.
See.
Yeah, it's really clever. And there's loads of tutorial videos.
You remove 2 of the toilet roll inserts, the ones at the end, and you leave the one in the middle.
Put your little prize in the middle. And you might see there, I've actually made a Christmas hat, Ray, if you want to
on. Yes, yeah, I'll do that over the headphones there on top of that. There you go, that looks ridiculous.
But I made that out of wrapping paper as well. But it's a really fun thing you can do with
kids. And you've included a cracker joke.
I have indeed, yeah.
What do you get if you eat Christmas decorations?
Tinselitis.
Right? You're easily amused.
But you see, this is the thing, right? And there's a chocolate in there.
There's
as
a
well.
Chocolate in
there.
But yes,
it's a great thing you can do with kids, and a prize. Don't forget, you got
and
a prize.
I got a key.
A key ring.
Yeah.
And
great.
That's actually made of sustainable wood. As
okay.
Well. So there
okay.
you go. But
did you tell me how much
kids.
Those? Because the main thing is the crackers.
The cracker snappers. So we'll pull another one. Just
yes. This is just.
Yeah.
Ah, yeah. So there you have it. How much are they each?
They're 12 for €1.
12 for €1.
Yeah,
okay.
It's nothing really, yes, you know. Yeah. And it's a day that you can make, you know, on a day.
Toilet roll inserts, free of charge. Leftover wrapping paper, free of charge.
Yeah.
What else? The little sweet there.
Sure, everyone has roses in the house or the office or something at this time of the year. A bit of ribbon or twine, you know, but you'll have that left over in the house. And it's just how horrible has the weather been the last few weeks? And if you just want to sit inside, you don't have to have the telly on. You just have the radio on with lovely Christmas music playing in the background. You can have great fun with Christmas cracker jokes, make them as good or as bad as you want. And it's a lovely
afternoon. I like it.
Yeah,
I'm
great.
Convinced. It's a pity it didn't crack when we pulled
it. Well, look, it's a work in progress.
It's a work in progress.
As we all are.
Niamh, what's your next project?
Text me in a suggestion and I will try it and fail miserably. I have no problem with it.
I don't know if you should have said that, but there, you've done it now. So Niamh is available for any Christmas projects you might have. 5 on 5 on RTE.ie. Clackers, as opposed to crackers. I was in Croatia this summer and they were selling clackers at the markets. I was so excited to see them as they brought back fun memories from times past. You're right about the wrists. It was so sore when you got a whack from one of the clacker balls. That's Claire and Kilkenny. And hello, my mother, Anna Mae Tracy, celebrated her 99th birthday on the 7th of December, the same day as her newest great-grandchild was born. She's a feisty, independent woman with an active life and a great group of diverse friends of all ages and genders. She recently lost her second eldest daughter, so this birthday had been twinged with a sense of loss also. She has 4 living children, 17 grandchildren, 28 grandchildren, great-grandchildren, sorry, and 1 great-great-grandchild. She's a proud Laois woman, although she lives in Kilkenny. A wee birthday wished to the oldest woman in the village she lives in would be greatly appreciated. Many thanks, Maura Neitrasic. No problem. Happy birthday, Anna Mae Tracy, who was 99 on the 7th of December, which is just over the weekend, Saturday. Niamh, thanks again.
Thank you.
You're crackers. Hey.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Or 51551 for your texts. Hope you're well on this Wednesday afternoon. Now, back in the mid-90s, a little boy from Belarus called Yuri Kim, as part of the Children of Chernobyl Ireland project, came for a Christmas holiday and he went to Bellustown in County Louth, and he went to the Brady family. And they loved him so much that they insisted that he come back Christmas after Christmas and summer after summer, and he became part of the Brady family. And it went on for about 8 or 9 years. And then it stopped because Yuri was getting older. He was going to college and things like that. And the Bradys hadn't seen Yuri for 15 years, although they'd kept in contact, until last Saturday night on the telly, because we managed to get Yuri Kim, originally from Minsk in Belarus, now working in South Korea, from Korea, into Studio 4 in the TV centre, and surprise, Tina and Derek Brady and Peggy, the grandmother, and Carla was there as well. And we said we'd do a follow-up phone call just to see how they're getting on. Good afternoon, Tina.
Good afternoon, Ray.
Was that all factually correct?
Oh, yes. Yes, definitely. Yeah.
Great to talk to you again. So have you gotten over the surprise?
Just about. I'm just about coming down to earth now.
Yeah. I have to apologise because we did tell you a few white lies. So you sent us an email originally, and what did you say
in
the email?
Basically just that about 25 years ago, this little boy arrived at my door and we took him in. He's 8 years old, knew no English. We knew no Belarusian. We had a fun time learning. And literally fell in love with him and insisted that the same child come back to us year after year rather than a different child each year. We thought that it would be lovely to make an impact on one child's life.
Yes, yeah.
For life. And I think we succeeded.
Yeah, and you expanded then, not just Christmas, but summers as well.
Yeah, we had 3 weeks in the summer and 2 weeks at Christmas and then telephone calls every Sunday night. Between.
So you emailed us as part of the Ray's Christmas Crackers, and
yes.
You said, is there any way possible that you could reunite us with Yuri Kim? So we were in a bit of a bind then, because if we said yes, we weren't going to be able to surprise you.
Exactly,
and to get him from South Korea, there's no way of bringing him over without, you know. So we had to pretend then that we weren't going to do it, but we offered you 4 tickets for the show. So yourself and Peggy, is Peggy your mum or Derek's mum?
Peggy's my mum.
Your
mum.
And Derek, your husband, and Carla arrived down, and you were in the audience there. And then Yuri
and
arrived down.
Thrilled to get front seats, we thought. Really? You know, we're going to be able to see everything.
Yes, and were you suspicious at all?
No, really not at all. Everybody thinks I must have known, but I had no idea. I think my reaction showed that.
Yes,
I
it
had
did.
No
it did.
Idea.
And you know what was beautiful about your reaction? It was the love you have for Yuri.
Yeah.
And the love he has for you as well was so obvious there in that split moment. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. So what happened after the show?
Well, after the show, we checked him out at the hotel and we brought him home. And we sat till maybe 4:30 in the morning drinking tea and talking. And I introduced Yuri, because last time he was here, he was so young. I introduced him to hot whiskies and Irish whiskies.
Right.
And we had absolutely great time and Sunday, I still didn't believe. I kept saying to Derek, it's really true. He's in that room. He's there. You know, he's asleep in there. And since then, we've just really just hung out as a family. And I've asked him, did he want to go anywhere in Ireland? No. We just want to stay here, right, hang out with us, just do everyday things.
And Yuri's on the other line. How are you doing, Yuri?
Oh, great. Thank you.
Good to talk to you again.
Yeah.
So 15 years since you've been in Bellewstown. What did you miss, and what are you enjoying now that you're back there?
Well, you know, it's great to see everybody, and, you know, everybody's in good shape, and I was worried about how everybody was going, and I got to meet Tina, Derek. Girls got big, and, you know, they're all adult now.
Yes.
I left them as kids, and it's great. I have two grown sisters, Carla and Jade. I'm just thrilled. We have long talks and, you know, long tea parties, and then... And, you know, you just walk around the garden. I used to water them trees on the hedge, and they were like my height. And now they're like, what, 15 meters?
Above you.
Yeah. And, you know, many things, you know, you taste those sausages Tina makes in the morning, and they're like nothing else. And, you know, all these little things, they come back. And it's like getting back. It's like a time machine, but in a good way. Connecting the ends, you know, the
yes.
past and the present.
Yeah.
Yes, it's wonderful.
And what are you doing in Korea?
In Korea, I translate from Korean to English mainly, but you know, I also do some French and Russian.
Right. And you're now, because they don't get RT television in Belarus, so your mum still thinks you're in Korea, does she?
Right. I haven't been with my parents for 2 years, so... since RT brought me here, and I asked you to, could I go to Belarus afterwards, because I have a big vacation sort of from work.
Yes.
And yes, I'm going to try to repeat sort of a surprise in there.
And what's your memory, Yuri, of the situation in Belarus back in the 90s when you came to Ireland?
Well, in the 90s, you know, myself included and other kids especially, we... had multiple issues with our health. We didn't have very good immune system and other things because there was, you know, caused by Chernobyl and
yes.
all the ecological problems afterwards. So Ireland at that time was bringing children to vacations to eat clean food, to enjoy clean air without any pollution for Christmases and summers. So they took me in on this program and they matched children to different families, and I was lucky enough to get into Tina and Derek Brady's, and we stayed together ever since.
Okay.
Unlike many other families. So,
yes, yeah. No, it's a beautiful thing, and even the way you refer to the two girls as your sisters.
Yeah, they are.
And Tina, Yuri sort of alluded there to how people were, because you had a bit of a health scare,
I did
didn't
indeed,
you?
Yes, I did. 5 years ago, I had a brain tumour removed, and Yuri was worried, of course, because he didn't see me. I think he was glad to see that I was okay, that
yeah.
we weren't just fooling him, telling him I was okay.
Yeah.
Even though he would use Skype and he could see me, but he still didn't think that
okay.
I was okay.
And yeah. you are okay, which is great.
I am okay, thank God, yes.
So what's the plan for the... Because you're going off at the end of the week, Yuri, over to Belarus. What's the plan for the rest of the next few days?
There's a big family gathering tomorrow night in a local hotel for
That's
Christmas
right.
dinner.
Great.
For Christmas dinner, yeah.
And Yuri will be the star guest, the guest
Yuri
of honour.
Yuri will be the star guest.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, listen, just thanks so much for being part of all of this. And it was so lovely to see you've been reunited there on Saturday night. People can see it back on the player if they want to.
Thank you so
Tina,
much.
Tina, happy Christmas, yes. Tina. Happy Christmas, Yuri.
Thank you, Ray. We can't thank you enough. It's made a wonderful, wonderful Christmas for us. Thank you.
Well, a guy called Owen Cody did an awful
yes.
lot of work. He pulled all
yes.
sorts of strings getting Yuri over from South Korea. So well done, Owen. Okay,
yes.
see you, Tina.
Thank you very much.
Bye now. Bye.
Bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
We're all embarrassed here. We're all embarrassed. Now, in February of 2017, which is nearly 2 years ago now, 18-year-old Chantelle Tynan made a video desperately appealing for people's help to get her life-saving treatment for the rare, incurable and multifaceted cancer she was battling with at the time. We spoke to Chantelle at the time when she put out the call. They needed 500,000 euro to get to Texas for a clinical trial. And after her appeal went viral, they successfully raised over 700,000 thanks to Irish people's generosity. Chantelle stayed in Texas receiving treatment for 20 months before coming home this time last year. And we said we'd catch up with her because we've never had you in studio, Chantelle, have we?
No, I haven't been here.
No, you've been on the phone.
Yeah.
And you brought your mum with you, Leona. How are you doing, Leona?
Good.
All the way up from Carlow.
Yeah.
Carlow Town. And I know you have to get a train. What time is the train at?
20 to 5.
Okay, we'll get you on the train. Yeah. We'll get you on the train. Okay. What age were you when you were diagnosed?
I was 16.
Right.
So I was having issues for the whole of year that I was 15, and then I got actually diagnosed at 16. And yeah.
From horrific. There on,
yeah, it was hard.
Yeah. And it wasn't just cancer. It was a rare type of cancer.
Yeah. So firstly, we found one tumour, and then I had an MRI and we found it on my brain as well. And that made my cancer multisystem, which is a lot harder to treat than single system. And so it started off in the brain and the vulva, and then it kind of just scattered throughout my body, my colon, stomach.
Right. And we live in a world now, Leona, where you can put anything into Google.
Yeah.
And so you put it in and you found out that there was only one man in the world.
Yeah, well, I was going out of my mind for a really long time, and I started to look it up, and it was really hard to get like a name. Dr. McLean didn't come up straight away, but I started to read kind of lots of literature, and at the end of all of the reports was this Dr. McLean. So that's when I put him into Wikipedia, as you do. And I contacted him, not knowing that he would actually get back to me, but he got back to me within hours. So.
Right. And he recognised what you had, Chantelle.
Yeah, so basically my doctors in Ireland sent over a really detailed email of how I was doing, and also we did as well. And he tried to coordinate some sort of care in Ireland. So we actually started my first chemo protocol in Ireland. But then after 8 months of that failing, we actually went to the States to have a proper review done.
So I remember you telling me at the time that you had to go to Texas.
Yeah.
You had to go to Texas. Mm. And I suppose you told people on social media as well that you had to go to Texas. We just have a little clip from that. This might be tough for you now. This is. Have you watched this back at all?
No,
you haven't. Okay. So this is from February 2017. And you were sort of at the last chance saloon here. This is your last port of call. Yeah. Last. Here we go.
If you can do anything, or if you can even donate like €1, like I'll leave the link below. You can contact me if you can do an event. But I really need to raise this money because I don't want to die. Yeah, there's really not much more to say. This is just how it is at the moment. This is what needs to happen.
Yeah, it's tough.
Yeah. And when people saw that, and it was, as you say, raw.
Yeah.
And it was very honest. Mm-hmm. And who does? Very few people want to die. You didn't want to die. Mm-hmm. And just, Leona, remind me then of what happened next. You put up that video.
Well, I had no idea that she had actually put up that video because she had been really, really low. And obviously now we had tried 9 different chemotherapies. They were all failing. She was getting progressively worse. There wasn't very much hope because over like the year prior to that, say we had raised over 100,000 from like anonymous, you know, donors, and then through the community coming together. So to be told that we had to come up with a minimum of 500,000 just for the initial treatment in a couple of months was... In my head, I was saying, this can't happen, so I'm going to lose my child. I felt so powerless. So she was really miserable, and I decided I was going to cook her favourite dinner. So I was down in the kitchen cooking the dinner, and my phone started to buzz because she had uploaded this video unknowns to me. It was just in the moment, and she just went with it. And my phone started buzzing and buzzing and buzzing, and I was like, who was, you know, I was driven demented because I was trying to get the dinner cooked. So everything was boiling over, and I'm going over looking at my phone, and I'm like, there's an error. Something's going on, like, and I start screaming the house down because it was literally, there was so many emails coming in from GoFundMe that I couldn't keep track. And my brother rang me and he said, did you see what's happening? And I hadn't actually went on to the total. I just seen the emails and I went on to the total, and within a few minutes, like, it was over like 100,000. And for the next 24 hours, like, the dinner boiled over. We didn't even eat it.
What is your favourite dinner?
My favourite dinner is a roast.
The roast, okay, yeah. Okay.
So for the next 24 hours, we didn't sleep. We just sat there refreshing the page, like, and just couldn't believe it. It was just like, it was like, I can't describe it. I can imagine that it's how somebody feels like if they won the Euro Millions, not even the lottery, because this meant everything to us. Yeah. You know, they're like, I can't even describe it. It was just incredible.
It was going to save a possibility of saving Chantelle's life.
That's what it was.
There was so many times that we had tried to go viral and tried to get my story out there. And it was over a period of time that I actually had to be there. Like, the first 2 years, it was like we were going back and forth and we were seeing what they could do from me living in Ireland. But this got to the point where the Irish doctors no longer could treat me. So I had to go to Texas, and this was kind of the last video that I thought I'd upload on it. And I wasn't expecting it to have such...
And it doesn't qualify for any, you don't qualify for any government scheme because it's outside of Europe.
Yeah, so we did.
It's not
ask,
only that.
Go on.
It wasn't only that, like, I worked in depth with this. It wasn't only that. There is some funding if you need to get treatment outside of Europe if it's not available within Europe. But when it becomes experimental, they will not. There is absolutely 100% no chance that you will get funding for experimental treatment. And we were gone through all of the different protocols that Dr. McLean had said we could try. We had done all of those in Ireland, and the drug was available. But this drug that saved my child's life was called clofarabine, and it cost $135,000 for 5 days. So we were really lucky that we raised what we did, because obviously her treatment was longer than we had
anticipated. Yeah.
We were hopeful that we were going to be over there for a year. We had huge support from the Gavin Glynn Foundation, you know, as they helped us with our apartment, flights, logistical stuff. And we wouldn't have been able to even get there in the first place without them. But because we had to stay so long, our bill, actually, we would still owe $1.5 million at this point. But because the hospital heard her plea, seen what the public done for her, they said whatever we had, they were going to work it out and that they were going to treat her. So it just, like, you know, everything kind of had a knock-on effect. Yeah,
I know you've thanked people before, Chantelle, but I'm sure you're constantly thanking them.
Oh, I feel like I could never say thank you just enough, because that year was just so powerful for me. Like, I couldn't believe that we were travelling back in February to Texas just to have one more kind of appointment. We hadn't had the money yet, and then I put that video up, we raised the money, we go to Texas, and then they tell me that I actually wasn't well enough to fly home, but we had just raised enough, so it was just perfect timing. Everything worked out perfectly. And just,
you're very close, because Leona, you and Chantelle, when you were 18.
I always say that she's, you know, she's been my one constant throughout my whole adult life. I don't know, you know, what it is to be a fleeting teenager or whatever, because she was there from the time I was 18. So she was an only child for 8 years as well. Right. And through everything I've been through in my life, she's been by my side. Yeah. So it is.
You're very, very close.
Yeah.
And then, speaking of teenage years, you were sort of, they were taken from you, weren't they?
Yeah. It's like I matured really well in the hospital, but anything outside of the hospital, like real adult life struggles, college, things like that, I missed out on.
Okay. But I would imagine it fast tracks your maturity, because you're so close to death. You have a different, like, way of looking at life.
When you have to plan your funeral and do that kind of almost with a smile, because you want to be positive about it and you want that experience to be good for the people around you. Like, I didn't really think about it as it being a funeral for myself, but for the living and for the people who would be there and how they would cope when I was gone. These are all of the different things that would go through my mind all of the time. It wasn't about me going. Obviously, I wanted to live, but at the same time, I was worried about everyone else around me if I was gone. That was like the biggest struggle. And I think that's where the doctors in Texas came in. Every time I had a negative thought, because obviously there was, I was going down such a negative hill and I was getting worse, they would always try and keep me positive and help me in whatever way they could. At times they didn't really know where I was going either, yes, but they always kept me positive and they always approached everything with a smile. Okay. And I think that's what helped us.
Now, we spoke to you when you were cancer-free, yeah, as such. Where is it at now?
So it doesn't actually get cancer-free, but it gets to no active cancer.
No active cancer,
yeah,
right.
So there's no cure, but it's very, like...
It's dormant.
It's dormant, yeah. There's no evidence of the disease in a year now, so it's brilliant. I'm on one oral chemo tablet a day, and I'm on a few other medications, but I'm doing really, really well. Okay.
Have things got back to some sort of normality for you?
Yeah, so the first thing I did was kind of got back into fitness because I lost a lot of my stamina throughout chemo and I obviously gained a lot of weight on steroids and things. So I've gotten back into exercise. So I exercise twice a week. I do like intense classes and then I do a walk each day. And I'm looking into college now because, yeah, I wanted to wait until I had like a year of no evidence of the disease coming back before looking into college. So now I'm ready.
Right.
She has her open night on Thursday.
Yeah.
So we're excited that
you're going in
to start the new year.
Carlo IT. Oh, brilliant, brilliant. Mm-hmm. And there's some other aspect of your life that's doing well?
Yeah, I have a boyfriend.
All right.
Lee, he's amazing. He's been very, very supportive. There's only so much you can do when you haven't actually had cancer in your life, but he's taken it in his stride and he is so, so supportive. So yeah, that's really, really good.
Leona, you're beaming there. Yeah. Can't get the smile off your face.
Yeah, I'm so proud of her. We've come a long way, you know. There was days there didn't look very bright, you know. It was really, really tough. And I suppose like looking at her today and thinking about where she was even this time 2 years ago, it's a very different place, you know. So we're excited now because last year when we got home, it was like a big rush to Christmas. And, you know, we were absolutely over the moon to be home, obviously, but everything felt like it was pressure. Mm. And, you know, you're trying to catch up with people and everything. And this year has just like things have just started to become like it's a different normal. It's, yes, I won't say it's the same, you know.
Because your attitude to life must be different as well.
I think it changes everything. Like things that were once important are no longer important, you know. It's just you look at things very, very differently. You're more appreciative of the things around you, you know, the people around you, and other things that are just less significant and they don't matter so much.
Yeah. Yeah. So what are the plans for Christmas? There'll be a roast dinner, I'd imagine.
There'll be the turkey on Christmas Day and then the roast on St. Stephen's Day.
How does your mum do her roast potatoes?
Oh, she does amazing roast.
Does she?
Potatoes.
Do you, yeah, parboil them, Leona?
I actually don't. I
don't
slow,
they're frozen.
No, I slow no, roast them and then I add the goose fat and the whole lot of.
Slow roast them, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And then how do they get crispy then? If they're
Because then at the end you shake them and you put the goose fat on and
turn up the temperature, do
yeah.
you? Oh,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah. That's then scald them.
You scald them then. Okay, right. Right, yeah. So you're looking forward to that.
Oh, I am.
Yeah.
Have you written a list or what way does it work?
Well, Santa still comes.
Yeah. We do the four gift rule in our house. So yeah, we do something you want, something you need, something to wear and something to read.
Wow, and I'm going to write that down. The four gift rule. Go on,
yeah,
give it to me again.
Something you want.
Yeah.
Something you need.
Yeah.
Something to wear,
yeah,
and something to read.
Oh, very good. That's yeah, very good. And it rhymes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where did you get that from? Did you come up with it yourself? Or?
No, I didn't come up with it myself. I heard it years back and then I just thought, you know what, like the kids get so much, like Christmas isn't like it was when we were kids, you know. When we were kids, you got everything at Christmas or your birthday. Yeah. But now it's like
Oh, yes.
You know, everyone's getting
everything.
Every day is
Christmas Day.
Yeah, it is. You know, like, no one really needs anything, if you think about it. There's very
some
little.
People do, but most of us do. Yeah.
You know, in the bigger scheme of things, we don't need these things that
so
we think
So the four gift rule, something you want, something you need, something to wear and something to read.
Yeah.
There you go. As delivered by Leona Tynan. Chantal, great to see you.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, and you're looking great, and good luck with everything. Yeah. College and boyfriend and exercise and all that.
Yeah.
And Leona, great to see you as well. Happy Christmas.
You too.
Happy
Thanks Christmas. A million.
Thanks for coming in.
Thanks.
Hope you get the train.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Our 51551, and we just spotted a lovely tweet there. The 43 driver that's driving a 1510 bus, he's dressed as Santa and is spreading some well-needed cheer around the place. I love that. I was in town today, I cycled back and I spotted a girl with tinsel wrapped around the crossbar of her bike, which is nice. We used to do a thing years ago, and just a mention for people who got involved all those years. We used to have Red Tinsel Day, and I'd cycle in with a Santa outfit on, and I scooted in and all sorts of things. And then we'd have Santas all over the country who'd cycle into work and spread good cheer, and then we'd talk to them. It was great. Wait. Do that again next year. It's too late for this year. Now, a new documentary all about Donald Trump's mother, Marianne McLeod, is set to hit your television screens this evening. Maura Trump tracks the emigration of a young Scottish woman, as in Marianne, born and raised on the island of Lewis, and she emigrated to America. Presenter Sheila McEnanig joins me now from our Galway studio. Good afternoon, Sheila.
Hi, Ray. How are you
doing? Did I just make you a man there? Should be Nick.
A little bit,
yeah. Sorry. Nick and Enig. Sorry, that's you're not Mock and Enig, you're Nick and Enig. Sorry.
I don't mind.
And is that Nick and Enig or Nick and Enig? Nah, where do you say it?
Nick and Enig.
Nick and Enig, yeah, there you go. I was right. Okay. Congratulations on the documentary. Why did you decide to do it?
Well, I suppose I didn't decide to do it. I was lucky enough to be asked to come along to do it with the companies who were doing it. So TG Cahir and BBC Alba were looking at the story of Marianne McLeod, as she would have been, Marianne McLeod, who later became Mary Trump. And Abu Media in Connemara and Mastard in Lewis, actually, made the documentary for TG Cahir and BBC Alba. And I was lucky enough to be asked to present it.
Yeah, because all we know really about Donald Trump's mother is that she was interviewed by Bibi Baskin once. That's probably the height of it, isn't it?
Yeah, I know. And I didn't know that, I have to say.
Oh, did
I was
you not?
Delighted. I didn't. No, I knew nothing about her. You know, while we were making the programme, we were in Lewis and Torkel Crichton, whom we interviewed there, said to me, you know, every president wants to find their roots somewhere, mostly in Ireland. That's the most popular place to be rooted. But Donald Trump, who has this immediate link to somewhere like here, says nothing about it.
Mm.
So I knew that there was some Scottish link. I didn't know that it was his mother, and I certainly didn't know that she was a speaker of Gaeilge, of Gaelic, Scots Gaelic. So it was a really interesting journey to go on.
So Lewis, you mentioned, that's the Isle of Lewis, which
that's
is
right.
in the Outer Hebrides.
Yeah.
You visited there. What sort of place is it?
It's a cold place. I was there in February. It was absolutely freezing. It's very beautiful, windswept, wild. It's the edge of the world, much like the west of Ireland or the Aran Islands are the edge of the world. Freezing cold north winds, though. Very beautiful.
And loads of parallels between the Scottish and the Irish who would have left their home places to go to America. What was her family situation?
She was the youngest of many children. There were 12 children, I think, and she was the youngest. And her siblings had all emigrated before her to Canada, to New Zealand, to America. So I suppose she knew it was probably the best choice for her. There was very little left on the island, and especially after the First World War, where not only were a lot of men lost in the war, but on the night they were coming home on New Year's Eve in 1918, one of the two ships that was bringing the survivors from Lewis home sank. And all of the people on board died. So all of those men, half of the men who were returning to the island died. So that left a situation where there were very few men, there was very little work, there was very few people for women to marry. They knew that the future was, you know, leaving the island. Mm. And she had somewhere to go. She could join her sisters in New York, which is what she did.
And as a young woman, what would her journey have been? Where did she go to get a ship across to America?
She went, oh my God, where did she go? Yeah. I'm trying to remember. I know it's in the documentary and I can't remember now off the top of my head.
Well, she got there anyway.
The name of the ship. She did. She got there and she had a journey along the way. So when she was 14, she wrote to a girl in Dundee, a girl called Agnes Stiven. She saw her name in the newspaper when Agnes won an art competition. And in those days, your name and address were printed in the newspaper.
Right.
And they became pen pals. So before she went across to the States, they met up for the first time. They've been writing to each other for 4 years. And so a lot of the stories that we have about her young life, come through Agnes telling those stories to her grandchildren and eventually writing them down, not knowing that this Mary Trump that she was friends with all those years before had become a very wealthy woman and eventually was the mother of a president.
But when she arrived in New York through Ellis Island, as all immigrants did, she worked as a domestic.
She did, which was very common at the time. I suppose we kind of think of a domestic as being a particular role in life. But as Gwenda Blair mentions, she's a biographer of the Trump family. She mentions in the documentary about a third of the population of the US at that time worked as domestic helpers in one capacity or another. So, you know, nobody had microwaves, nobody had pressure cookers, nobody had washing machines, nobody had all the things we're so used to now. All of the menial work had to be done by people. And those of us leaving the west of Europe or the middle of Europe looking for a better life were only too happy to do those jobs. And Marianne actually got a job in the Carnegie household in New York, Carnegie Hall, of Carnegie Hall fame.
Right.
So she did quite well and she stayed there for a couple of years.
And you found out her vital statistics, which struck me. She was 5'8", blue eyes and blonde.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, she, as they say down in Kildare, she was a looker. That's my granny used to say. Yeah.
And the photographs are amazing. Like, she was just, she was beautiful. You know, actually, when I did that piece to camera talking about her and what was written down in the ship's manifest about her height, I kept saying, they have so many takes of me saying she was 8'5". I just couldn't get it right. But she was 5'8". She was tall. She was blonde. And she had $50. Which That's seems like right. nothing, but I suppose at the time that was her parents giving her everything they had to say, go make a better life for yourself, find something, and she really did.
When did she find Fred Trump?
Well, she arrived in the States. She turned 18 actually just before she arrived. So on the ship, she went turned 18, and she met him within the next couple of years at a party. And as she says herself, he was the most eligible bachelor in New York. Now, he wasn't a very wealthy man when they met. He came from a family basically of builders. His father had worked as a builder. His grandfather had come through the Klondike. So he was somebody who was really trying to kind of make his mark. And at that time in America, I suppose, after the crash, through the 40s and 50s, Fred Trump made the best of everything that came his way. He was a great man for a deal, as his son turned out to be.
Yes. And they got rich pretty quickly then, because you mention her driving back to their pretty big house in Queens in a pink Rolls Royce.
She used to go to the laundry. They had a chain of laundrettes, and she used to go to collect the money from the machines, I suppose. And she would drive around in this pink Rolls Royce. So the money came quite quickly. And when they did visit Lewis, on one of the visits when all of the family came, a couple of decades later, they actually brought a Cadillac onto the island for the weeks that they were there. Oh. So, and people still talk about that Cadillac.
I wonder, is that where Donald got his showy side from, his mum?
He absolutely says that. He got his sense of showmanship from his mother. Yeah, and he certainly got his hair from his mother. She had the same sort
bouffant,
of bouffant blonde. Bouffant. Exactly, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Running through the documentary, which is a lovely documentary, is the nearest suggestion that that could have been an Irish woman from Inishmore or Achill or whatever. They could have met Fred Trump and be the mother of the President of the United States of America.
I mean, I suppose it could have been anyone. And we do speak to Moira Brett, Moira Fetch-Vachlin, as she was before she left Ireland. Now, she left a few decades later. She left in the 60s. But we were looking at that coming from a small island. So Moira left in the 60s. They had no plumbing. There was a well down the road where they got water. And she, it was a very interesting story, but in brief, she got a job in one of those big houses. So she went from Inishmore to Madison Avenue, where she had her own television, she had a car to drive, she was living in New York. She said, I remember the first time I saw an escalator. Just that huge contrast.
The thing of dreams.
That's it. Yeah. That's it. You know, and, you know, she says herself, the streets aren't paved with gold, but if you're willing to work here, things can change for you. And they really changed for Marianne Trump.
Maher Trump is on tonight on TG Cahir at Lahore Tréaslann Ní. Presenter Sheila Nicanéni Gurmagad. Slán, it's 51551 ray at rte.ie. Chantel D. McMellick says, so 1.8 million for a printer, and that lovely young lady and her family had to raise that money themselves. Shameful. Happy Christmas and best wishes to her in all her endeavours, says D. And my name is Thomas Byrne, and I work as a bus driver in Dublin Bus. Clontarf depot. For the month of December, I drive the buses from our depot dressed as Santa Claus. I started Dublin Santa Claus mainly to bring Christmas cheer to the travelling public in our fair city, and each year Dublin Bus Santa grows more popular with the amount of people that take pictures and post on various social media platforms. Dublin Bus Santa is a happy outlet for people who travel on my bus, and it puts a smile on their face and mine when they see the man in red behind the wheel. And it does. And when somebody dressed as Santa says Happy Christmas to you, to a complete stranger, there's just something happens. There's a magic there that happens. I've been that Santa. Michael says, I live in the in France. He doesn't say the south of France, he just says France. With scrambled eggs, when whipped up with cream, with the butter melting in the pot, add a sprinkle of black pepper and chives. It's gorgeous. And Peter, he said, wants to know about the scrambled eggs. Can you explain the scrambled eggs recipe? Never heard of adding cream before. Ah, come on, Peter. Cream, yeah, improves everything. Butter improves everything. So you just, you do your scrambled eggs in a jug or whatever and add a bit of salt and pepper, and then you pour it into the pan and you whisk it around for a little bit. And then you leave it sit there for about 30 seconds, 45 seconds. Then you add a bit of butter and a drop of cream, and then you mix it all up again. And then you dish it out and you have that lovely buttery, creamy, eggy scrambled eggs. It is just delicious. You'll never go back to the old way. Now, while we're on food, there is goose on the menu for Sandra Brennan and family this Christmas. And Sandra joins us on the line. How are you doing, Sandra?
Hi, Ray. How are you?
Thanks for taking our call.
No problem.
That particular goose has a name.
She does. It's Doris.
Doris. And where is Doris now?
Doris is out my back garden.
Aha. Now, you have a bit of history here. We'll come to Doris in a moment. Two years ago, you had a bird called Gary. What type of a bird?
He was a turkey.
A turkey, right. Yeah. And he lived in the back garden as well?
He did. My son offered to do the turkey for Christmas dinner.
Right.
So I thought this was wonderful. He was 19 at the time. And in he walks with the live turkey under his arm. And I was a little bit overwhelmed, as you can imagine.
Yeah. At what stage was this now? Was it a couple of weeks or when was it?
This was about late October, early November.
Oh, right. Okay. That's early. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So we put him out the back and then the lads named him. And then I kind of felt a little bit sorry for him because it was getting cold at night, and so I started to bring him in to the kitchen at night time.
Ah, Sandra.
And my son said, "Mom, like, what's he doing?" So I said, "Oh, you know, it's a bit cold out there because I'm not sure how you wear a turkey because I am a Dublin woman."
Yes.
And, well, so are my children and my husband, but their grandfather was a Roscommon man.
Ah.
And so I think they have a little bit of that blood in them, the farmer in them.
Right.
Because they don't see it as a pet, they see it as food.
As dinner, yes.
As dinner.
Christmas dinner, yeah.
That's it.
Okay. But you were seeing it more as a pet.
Well, no, I didn't get attached to it, but I just wouldn't treat it cruelly either,
yeah.
You know.
Okay.
So I just wanted to bring it in and make sure it was warm and nice in the kitchen.
And then I
let it out in the morning.
Did Gary have a bed or what did he do? Did he just walk around the kitchen or...?
No, we had a little box with straw and all in
okay.
it, and, you know, and he came in, and then he knew kind of the routine. He would
right.
go out in the morning, and he'd have free range at the back, and he'd go around the back, and, you know.
And was he suspicious of the cooker or anything when he was in the kitchen?
No, he wasn't suspicious at all of the executioner either. So,
no.
Well, that was up to the boys now. I didn't want to have any part in that, and
yeah.
they said if I had to kill my own meat, I'd be a vegetarian.
Right.
You know, I think most people would be probably the same. Now, I did get a bit of stick over it because people were saying, oh, that's cruel, and, you know, you're going to eat them. But they had turkey for dinner as well, so I just wondered where they were getting their turkey from. You know, the way
yes, at least
it,
you knew the provenance of your turkey.
He was well looked after.
Yeah.
He was free range. He was brought in every night. And I suppose I take the slack off the vegetarians, fair enough, because they're vegetarian. But if somebody's having turkey for dinner and they're kind of, you know, have a problem about me having a turkey, I don't really see the sense.
No. And the brilliant thing about it is, I've never done it myself, is that you can feed it certain things to improve its flavour. Did you do that?
Yes. Well, we fed it this bag of seed that my son got off the farmer
right.
when he bought him. So then we decided we might give him a little bit of sage. And parsley. To flavour him up a little bit.
So and the son Luke, is he's responsible then for killing
he,
the Gary.
Totally responsible for it.
Right. Yeah,
and my husband. And you see, I didn't want any part of that, which was a bit of a cop-out, I know.
Yeah.
But I just wanted him presented to me like you would in the supermarket.
Right.
Plucked and all ready for the oven, which they did.
Brilliant, yeah.
And they had no problem with that because, you know, that was their food.
Yeah, yeah. And did you eat him on Christmas Day then?
Well, no, what happened was I have all my family around for Christmas Day, so there was about 20 of us. And my mother said, if you kill Gary, I'm not coming around on Christmas Day. So I couldn't have not have my mum around. And then my sister had a protest. And right. Then my niece had a protest. So they had to save the Gary WhatsApp.
Right.
But so we didn't kill him Christmas Day. We waited till New Year's Day.
Oh, right.
They killed him then.
You got a stay of execution. Yeah.
My mother-in-law up. And she was fine about it because she was married to the Roscommon man. So
ah,
she,
yes. She has rural blood in her. Yes, yeah.
Well,
yeah.
She had.
Yeah.
So
I hope nobody came in the middle of that and said, she said she wasn't coming to Christmas dinner if we killed Gary. So I hope nobody came in the middle of that. Gary's a turkey, just so you know. Now,
a turkey. So Gary's a turkey, by the way. I'm 100% sure of that.
How was Gary? How was he?
He was gorgeous. You mean what?
Yes, flavour, yes,
like,
yes.
He was absolutely gorgeous, I have to say. And he was snow white meat. Oh, he was gorgeous. And all my son's friends came in and lined up for a slice of him.
Right.
Because they went off to get him and they were fascinated by this.
Yeah, so
as Dublin people are, I suppose.
And did he taste of sage and parsley and all that?
Well, we had to put a bit of stuff in him.
Yeah, so there. So. Okay, so that was 2 years ago. Fast forward to today and Doris the goose is out in the back garden.
That's it, yeah.
Blissfully unaware of her fate.
That's it, yeah. And what happened was my son said, oh, this year we have goose, ma'am. And I knew what was ahead of me this time. So he went off and he came in a couple of weeks ago with the goose. So
right.
I was a little bit overwhelmed again. So out the back she went and she's doing fine. She's huge, though. She grew very quick and very big. And I was expecting a goose to be kind of like the size of a duck.
Yeah, no, they're bigger.
But it's more like the size of a swan.
Yes, yeah. They have a great big wingspan there. Yeah.
She's big. She's big. And of course, being from Dublin, I said, is she male or female? And the boys laughed and said, she's a goose. And I said, yeah, is she male or female? And they said, a goose and a gander, ma'am.
Yeah.
So a goose is female.
Right. And that's what she's called, Doris. And
Doris.
I was just looking it up there. It seemingly it goes well with apple. So you could feed it some apple.
Apple,
okay. Yes.
I didn't know that.
Now, by coincidence, Simon Delaney, actor, director and TV presenter extraordinaire, he is coming on. Well, he's here now in Studio 10. And he cooked goose before.
I did.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Good to see you, Simon.
How are you, Ray?
Yeah, say hello to Sandra.
Sandra, how are you keeping?
How are you, Simon? I've seen you in the snapper. You were fantastic.
God bless you. Thank you very much, chicken.
Now, Doris the goose out in the back garden. She doesn't know
that
she's going to be cooked over Christmas.
I like the comment about it. I hope nobody's just tuned in to hear we're killing Gary. If you kill Gary before Christmas Day. Do you know what? Yeah, I cooked goose about 5 or 6 years ago, just because I had notions about myself, and I thought, because I cook Christmas dinner every year at home, and I just thought to do something different, I'd try goose, and I did, and it wasn't great. There wasn't an awful lot of meat on it.
I've heard that.
I tell you what, it takes a bit of cooking in terms of you have to, you know, you have to turn it over halfway through the process. You have to keep basting. It takes a little bit, but listen, it's by all accounts, it's gorgeous. Maybe I just made a hames of it.
But yours wasn't free range. You didn't know where your goose came from.
No, we didn't. I didn't know the goose's name. Yeah, I didn't christen the thing. I just went to the shops and bought it. But the very best of luck with the goose. Now, what sort of stuffing are you making with it? Are you going to stuff it?
Well, I really haven't cooked a goose before, so I'm not too sure what to do with it. I was going to just do the L Google and see what happens, but I might try the L apples. I might give it apples, actually.
Yeah, give it apples.
Feed it apples, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And apricots as well, it came up.
Apricot
stuffing.
Apricots.
Look at you.
Look at you growing apricots in your greenhouse. Apricots, Ray.
So there's no WhatsApp groups, is there, to save Doris or anything like that this time around?
No, poor
Doris.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Doris, yeah.
And when's the big? Sure. When are you going to send her off to meet her maker?
I think it'll be the same thing. It won't be Christmas because they won't come out.
No,
they'll be too sentimental about her.
And is she in the house at all, Sandra?
Oh, I bring her in at night.
Do you?
Oh, you don't, Sandra, do you?
I do, but sure, it's been really cold and the lashings are raining. Sure.
But it's
I
a
couldn't
goose.
Leave her out there.
And where did you get her from? She didn't live in a three-bed semi when you bought her, did she?
Son went off. I think he went to Ballyroan or
Ballyroan,
somewhere
yeah.
in Port... Is that Port Leashem, I think?
Yeah, you could be right,
farmer.
Yeah.
He bought her off a farmer.
Right, right.
Fair home.
I leave you this one, and it refers to turkey and goose.
Okay.
If the turkey or goose had a fear of the oven, that would be agoraphobia. Agoraphobia.
Comedy gold, right? It's not even 4 o'clock. What is it? 4:15.
Sandra, I haven't done this ever on Radio 1, but I'm going to do it, make an exception for you. Do you want to say hello to anybody now that you're on?
Well, I won't say hello to Doris, but I will say hello to all the Brennan family and all the Shallow family and all the staff in Drimna Castle.
Is that where you work?
Secondary school, that's where I work.
What do you do there?
I'm an SNA there.
All right. Okay.
Good on you.
Well, listen, you're great fun. Good luck to you, Doris and Luke. And the rest of the family. Happy Christmas, Sandra.
Happy Christmas.
Bye, 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 bye. That's Sandra there. That's great.
They are now.
Have you ever eaten anything that you'd named? No.
No. I've come close to a couple of chocolate bars in my lifetime, but I never named them. Yeah, I've fallen in love with a couple of orange chocolate bars, but never christened them. Yeah. No.
Good to see you, Sandra Delaney.
All right.
This is the official introduction.
Yes, how are you?
You're here for loads of reasons, but mainly because you're directing Cinderella.
Yeah, in the Olympia.
Yeah, that's it. You're
there you go,
directing.
Yeah,
and how many years now have you directed the Olympia?
Do you know, funny enough, I was only having this conversation with Lisa yesterday. We were talking, because I was saying, I haven't had a Christmas off for, I think, 16 years, because I directed way back in Liberty, I directed the Panto in Liberty Hall, which then became the Tivoli Panto with Alan Hughes. And then I went over to the UK, directed a couple of Pantos over there in the UK, one in Wales, one in Belfast in the Opera House. And then I came back and I've been at the Olympia. I think this is my fifth or sixth year at the Olympia.
Right.
I think it's 5 years.
Yeah, and do you just, you build up, and then when it's on, that's you done, is it?
Well, that's what happens with the director's job in theatre. You're basically, you finish an opening night and you hand it over to the stage director and stage manager and off they go. They do the same thing. You do what's called, you freeze the show. You know, you do that during the tech week. So we're in the middle of our rehearsals at the moment. Next week we move into the Olympia and we'll have a couple of days tech, because Panto, as you know, it's so technical. There's normally lots of special effects. There could be
sound effects.
There'll be a transformation. There could be carriages, like in Cinderella. Now we have real horses on the stage.
Real horses?
Yeah. 110 kids, a carriage, all that. So that takes 3 days to tech, and then they'll open. We'll do a dress rehearsal Thursday night, Friday morning, and then 2 o'clock Friday they're off. And at that point, then the director's job would traditionally finish. But you are kept abreast of how the show is going. You get show reports.
Yeah.
So the show maybe is, if it's 10 minutes longer than it was when you left it, you might come back in and say, right, lads, pull it back, so you won't have to look at it. But you technically finish on opening night.
This is a tiring time for you.
Every day, a tiring time for me.
You have 4 children.
Record. Yeah.
And you do
love
what?
Coming over here. I might have been sitting upstairs in the canteen with a cup of tea. It was gorgeous.
Yeah, just to tell people, he was in a quarter past two.
And I came in yesterday, by the way. Did you know that?
Did you?
I was actually here a day early. And I walked in and said to the lovely lady, I'm here to see Ray Darcy. She went, are you? I said, yeah. Okay, have a seat there. Rang down. And I knew the minute she said it, I was a day early. So I came back.
Yeah, thank you for coming back.
I came back an hour ago.
Well, it's better to have been a day late.
Well, you see, this is it. I'm very punctual. 24 hours early.
Because I had a meeting down in Kildare a few months ago. And I had to cancel things to be there, and it involved getting up a little bit earlier.
Yeah.
Negotiating traffic, all that.
Yeah,
got there.
The joy.
All a bit quiet. It was all a bit quiet.
You weren't.
Made the call.
Wrong day.
This is Wednesday morning. I said, where are you? He goes, it was yesterday. That's embarrassing, isn't it?
Ray. We've all done it. You see, we're in our mid-30s now, right? These things happen to us, apparently, as we age, plummet towards our 40s from the other side. Oh, Lord.
So, 4 boys.
Yeah, we 4 boys, yeah. Yeah, the eldest is 13, Cameron. Elliot's 11, Isaac is 7, and Lewis is 3, who had his Christmas concert today, which I missed. But I've just been sent an uncut 9-minute video of him singing various Christmas songs dressed as Santa.
Great.
So that was fantastic. So I had a little cry upstairs in the canteen watching that, because it's another one of life's moments that I've missed because of this job. So it's exciting. Now, the letters have been done tonight, because they're going to go up the chimney tonight.
Right.
Because Santa needs time to sort
things. Do you have an elf in the house?
We don't. No, we don't. No.
Because they don't go to every house. I don't know what the criteria is.
There could be one since I left this morning. Right. I don't know. Things tend to appear in the house that I don't know about. So, no, we don't at the moment. But the four kids is enough, right?
Yes.
So they'll do their list tonight. They'll go up the chimney tonight. And then it's in the hands of Santa.
Yeah.
God bless them.
Four boys.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's that like?
It's busy.
Yeah.
It's a noisy house. Fortunately, they're great pals. They don't kill each other, which is great. They look after each other, you know. They shout and roar each other like we all did. But no, they're great. It's busy. And it's, you know, Lisa's busy with between dropping them to school, picking them up from school, football, whatever, you know, communion meetings, lunches, all that kind of stuff. So it's full on, you know. Yeah. And it doesn't help then that I'm kind of never there.
Yeah.
You know, but then again, what
well,
can
she'd
you do?
Have you back then after opening night, would she, for a bit? Well, then you're on, you're on TV3. Is it Friday, Saturday, Sunday?
Friday, morning? Saturday, Sundays, yeah. Haven't had a weekend after in 4 years.
Have you not?
No.
God.
Yeah, I know.
Think about that and feel sorry for him. We'll take a commercial break back after this.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Simon Delaney, the last time we had you on the telly, you had a book out.
A cookbook, that's right.
Yeah.
I cook pizza with you on the telly box, remember?
You So you love cooking?
Love it.
Yeah, and I presume then you're Mr. Chef on Christmas Day.
Yeah, I mean, I'm the head chef Monday to Friday, so Christmas doesn't change, but that's probably the one meal that I look forward to most over the year is prepping Christmas dinner. But I'll be very traditional. We do the turkey and the ham and the stuffing and all the trimmings. What I like to do every year is change the starters and desserts.
Okay, so what were you thinking on the starter this year?
Well, you see, here's the thing, right? And this is going to sound very... I was going to use a word there, but I won't.
Yeah, I know the word you're going to use,
The thing about cooking Christmas dinner and any dinner is the prep. It's all about the prep. And I learned that on MasterChef. It's all about the prep. I've got notes on my phone now about the menu, about starters and desserts.
So what are you thinking about?
I'm thinking, well, I'm going to do little individual brown breads and I might do a little ham and pork tureen. And
right.
I'm going to do a little seafood thing with salmon and prawns with a little light sauce and then I'll do a homemade sausage roll. So I'll serve them little bite sizes on a platter.
Oh, lovely.
You know, I'm adding a big slab of stuff.
Yes, yeah.
So you kind of just put that in the middle of the table and they're bite sizes. So you can have your own little
and
brown
bread. And the tureen,
bread.
You can prepare that in
you
advance.
You can make the same size.
You can make that in advance.
See, that's the key. So then you start thinking, well, what can I make on Christmas Eve? What can I make the day before Christmas Eve? Like, I'll make the desserts on Christmas Eve. So then you have to start thinking what dessert will hold in a fridge.
Right, what are you thinking?
For 24 or 48 hours, because we'll have relations over on Stephen's Day as well. And they're getting the same menu. Yeah. You know what I mean? Because you don't want to be cooking on Christmas Day. I'm thinking of like chocolate souffles or something, but I'll do them on the spot. A la minute, as they call it, because they take 12 minutes start to finish.
Right.
But that's a bit of theatre, you know, and they'll all stand there waiting for you to fail, but they all go, oh, look at
so
that.
So this is after doing everything, getting your starters out, doing the main course, the ham, the turkey, the sprouts.
Yeah, we see. The work's done
and
the
then
day.
You're going to do the souffle after
that. Yeah, but
the
work's done the day before. Like I'll prep all the veg on Christmas Eve.
Put it in water, chilled water.
Yeah, I'll do the sprouts, which is an absolute pain. I'll do the sprouts, the carrots, peel the spuds. I'll make the stuffing for the turkey. I'll dress the turkey, so I'll stuff it, you know, sprinkle it with butter, cover it with rashers, I'll wrap it in the tin foil, I'll put it in the oven. So all you're doing at 7 o'clock on Christmas morning is turning the oven on. The ham's in the pot with the sprouts,
yeah.
So that gets switched on. That's the dinner's actually done.
You make it sound so
easy. No, but the dinner is done. Yeah. It's done, it's cooked. The oven's doing the work then. So then you concentrate on your starters. So I make a couple of brown breads. Easy peasy.
You make them your own brown bread?
Yeah, but you buy a packet of it in the supermarket.
All right, go on.
So you just add milk into your little individual tins. Done, 40 minutes. Seafood starter is cold.
Yeah.
So you get a couple of pieces of salmon, slice them, slice up some prawns, a bit of seafood sauce with some scallions. That's done. The tureen, you'd have done the day before Christmas Eve. That's done. Happy days. It's about 3 o'clock, you're sitting down with a cup of tea and a chocolate orange. Happy days, right?
Yeah.
It's all about the preparation.
Yeah, I want one of those, you know, what do you call those, where you shoot something and they speed it up.
Oh, right. You want to shoot something?
Time lapse. I want a time lapse in your house. Yeah,
yeah, okay.
See that in practice.
I'll tell you.
Yeah, yeah.
You see, I have lots of helpers. So delegate.
Yeah.
Christmas Eve night, when you're all sitting around in your Christmas pajamas and you're standing there peeling the veg, put a pot of carrots in front of somebody, ask them to peel them while they're eating their chocolate Kimberleys, whatever. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Get them all involved. Take ownership over it.
So how was 2019 been for you?
Look, it was as good as 2018, right? You know what I mean? It was great. It was very busy. I did the Snapper again, obviously, during the summer.
Yeah, Sandra saw you there. She was a big fan.
Yeah, we had a great run. Another 90 shows we did, which was fantastic. I've just finished doing a bit of filming before Christmas for two different sort of TV thingies, which is great. There's more cooking stuff happening in 2020, which is brilliant. And then I'm working Friday, Saturday, Sundays, and then doing documentary stuff. Did the other follow-up to the driving thing on RT1 earlier this year. We're doing another one of those next year. So it's been busy, thank God.
Yeah.
Pays for a turkey, Ray. Thank God.
Every time we meet, because you're just mad busy. You'd prefer not to be as busy.
Oh, I'm a pain in the arse at home. Lisa must be delighted I'm at work. Right. You know. Right, yeah. But I put the key to my success down to two things. I'm cheap and I'm available.
Well, you're multi-talented as well. Can I add that?
But I wouldn't say that now.
Versatile
is a great word that covers lots of things, right? Yeah. I'll have a go at anything. I'll do anything.
You do it well, though, now, in fairness.
I know, I love it. Listen, it beats working for a living. And I was a sales rep for 10 years. I've done the 9-to-5 and I did shift work, worked in factories, worked on building sites. I've done all that stuff.
Right, but we better do this.
We better mention the Panto.
Yeah, Cinderella, the Panto, Dublin's Olympia Theatre. Yes. It opens on Friday and it runs till Saturday, January 4th. Is there a nice sort of bit of competition and a bit of niggle between the various pantos?
Look, we slag the Tivoli Panto and the Gaiety. They slag us. It's great. It's all done in jest. Panto's a very hard way to work over the Christmas. They put in an awful lot of work to it. We're blessed with a great cast. Some of your own friends and neighbours, MacLean Burke and Ryan Anderson from Fair City. We've James Patrice in there. We have a great cast.
Ryan is doing it because it's busy. That's going to be because he's dancing with the stars as well.
I'm telling you now.
Next year
in me glue. No, not unless they put me on roller skates, right? That boy can dance though.
Yeah,
oh, that boy can dance.
I've seen him. I've been at
he's brilliant.
He could win,
and a nicer lad you couldn't meet.
Okay,
Simon, come and see him in the Olympia.
I will.
Good.
Right, Simon Delaney, thank you very much.
Pleasure.
For the
what time do you want me Christmas Day?
What
time do you want me Christmas Day? I'll bring the turkey cooked.
Brilliant.
No problem.
Yeah, right. Simon Delaney in our house doing the cooking on Christmas Day. Mary Wilson is on the way. We are back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday evening.